Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp, live in Rio, and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Hey, not too much, Andrew. You know, last week I was at Pinnacles National Park in Northern California, Central California, really. I was in the middle of a cave without cell phone reception, probably an hour at least from civilization, when my iPhone's flashlight went out in the middle of the cave. At that moment, I really feared for my life, I can't lie to you. And now that I'm thinking back on it, I'm guessing that's probably how you're going to feel for the next 2 weeks, right?
Yeah. First of all, at some point I want to do a separate pod on off-season Golliver and your adventures through national parks of this country. I feel like there's a real man versus wild type dynamic going on there. But yes, that's exactly how I felt. It's Wednesday night now. I've been in Rio for about a day, and you know, we're just treading carefully here. I don't want to get in any trouble.
Yeah, spoiler alert. This is take two of the podcast. Take one, you were either kidnapped and held for ransom all morning, or we recorded it in a bathroom and the echo was too bad, so it didn't work.
Yeah, it was not great. Just the setup at the media center was a little dicey. So we'll see how things go. They can only improve. And you know, now I'm back in we're coming to you live from my hotel room in downtown Rio. It's great.
I'm picturing the showers just spraying water all over the room right now, or are those reports overstated?
I feel like at any Olympics, the go-to is to TwitPic, or I guess TwitPic is like 2009 era Twitter.
I love that
Twitter,
callback. But, I love it.
Yeah. is to send out shots of your shower and complain. But nah, man, we're good. Having a little bit of an issue with the outlet system here. I bought an adapter, and the adapter works for the outlets in the hotel or in the hallway of my hotel, but it doesn't work in my actual hotel room. So we're going analog for a little while here in my hotel room, and I'm gonna have to go out and find some new adapters in the streets of Rio later tonight. So that should be exciting.
So you're gonna be shaving and using your electric toothbrush in the hallway, in case anyone wonders.
Yeah, exactly. It's all part of the experience, the pageantry here with the Olympic experience.
Well, hey, let me ask you a question, because I know we're joking about how bad it is, but what's the city look like? I mean, is it as beautiful as it seems like from the pictures I've been seeing?
So there are actually, I kind of go back and forth, like alternate by the hour. There are times when you will look around and be like, man, like all the haters were wrong. Rio is awesome. This is great. And like last night I got dropped off on the beach and had to walk like a mile to my hotel. And it was fantastic. I was all in on Rio. And then there are other times when you will be stuck in traffic on an Olympic transport bus, and like what should be a 30-minute trip will turn into like an hour and 20-minute trip. And you start to see why people were complaining. And it's tough. Like, I don't want to be too hard on Rio, because like the logistics here don't make sense. But at the same time, the logistics in like 95% of cities around the world don't make sense. So like, it's not necessarily their fault.
So when you're saying logistics, I mean, take us through, what's your day going to be like? I mean, you went to the media room for some reason that's not at your hotel. And then how far away is it? They're not, presumably they're not holding the basketball games at your hotel either.
Yeah. Well, the basketball games are about an hour away from me.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. So, but I'm on the beach, so I win there. Like stuff like the outlets, there are very basic things where you can see that Rio is still sort of developing. And, you know, one of the things that's like, most people here don't speak a word of English. My like experience overseas has been that you can sort of mumble through with people, and they kind of, and like they mumble things, and you sort of come to an understanding. But here, like if you start out in English, you get a lot of blank stares. My favorite interaction thus far was with my cab driver from the airport. He didn't speak a word of English, but he did. He knew enough to ask me about the presidential election.
Uh-oh.
and was asking about Hillary, who I was voting for, and I said Clinton, and then we bonded over making fun of Donald Trump.
So I take it you didn't practice like the Rosetta Stone Portuguese before your trip.
No, I don't have a lot of Portuguese in me. I do know Spanish, but I get kind of weird about Spanish because I don't want to be like condescending or it's like Tim Kaine at the convention, basically.
Yeah, no, I think you should like, own the Tim Kaine. They just break it out every once in a while. Bueno.
Yeah, I just feel like such a dork. I'm not a good enough Spanish speaker to speak it without sounding like an American idiot.
Well, so far, our international coverage of the Olympics has been great. I think Sports Illustrated should be very proud of this. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Where do you stand on street food?
Yeah, generally opposed. But, you know, sometimes when you go to a foreign country, it's just sort of the most obvious thing, right? And usually you feel like you go with the crowd. So if there's a line of like 20 people lined up for something that's coming out of a taco truck or a you know, some sort of a food cart, I'm usually in.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the other struggle that I'm facing right now, through about 36 hours in Rio is like, I'm generally pretty adventurous on street food and like, especially like in LA, that was like my favorite part about living in LA. But in Rio, like, Some of the vendors on my street are making like full filet mignon type meals, and I feel a little less comfortable if you're like giving me just a steak out of like a store window, basically. And
wait, is the lack
so
of comfort
that,
from you're not sure what animal it is or what's causing that?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I can't explain it. It just sort of I get kind of a weird vibe from some of these places. And so I went out last night on a like food finding mission solo, and I spent about 45 minutes walking up and back, and just I couldn't really find anything that I was really feeling, and I wasn't gonna let myself go to the McDonald's and be like that awful American, but long story short, I am subsisting principally on churros from a street truck there, and the churros were fantastic, so I have no complaints on that front.
No, and I was just reading this article from the foreign press, and they said the cinnamon actually in Brazil is tainted and it has Zika. So
there we go.
So you might need to get tested. No,
whatever, man. It was worth it. That was a great churro.
So just to boil this down, it sounds like you're having trouble with the logistics, the language, and the food. Do we have potable water? I mean,
we don't have potable water, but I am drinking a Coke right now. Nice Olympic sponsor tie-in. And
I'm really worried about you. This, like, I was starting off as a joke about being in the cave and nervous for your safety, but I think I really am nervous now.
No, man. Look, you and all my family are nervous about me, and I'm going to be fine. This is going to be a great 2 weeks. Everything is great. The weather is 75 degrees and generally perfect, although it was a little cloudy today. But, you know, I think it's just going to take – there's one of the things that I've enjoyed thus far is that you have, like, legions of journalists from all over the world, and I guess soon we'll have fans as well. And everybody is kind of equally confused. So it's like a cultural mixing pot of – confused people looking for the right bus, and there's kind of a nice bonding experience through that.
Can I just say I'm having a really hard time picturing you on one of these media buses because you're kind of an independent guy, you do your own thing, and those things are just like pure cattle transport, you know?
Yeah, well, it's a little different. I'm down here with a lot of lifers who have covered like several Olympics and sort of they know the whole routine, and so I'm a little bit like a fish out of water with some of them, and who are because I'm also really not into like most of the just, like standard Olympic sports. I'm pretty much here for basketball, but it's all like it's August, so literally the only other thing I would be doing is at home, like bitching about the heat in DC and watching Netflix. So I'm cool with it, you know.
How long did, I mean, where are you? Like, how long did it take to get there? And, you know, for the ugly Americans, like you said earlier, people who don't understand where Rio is, like, put it into perspective for us. And what kind of a journey was it to get there? Because I'm reading all these tweets, like, people are stuck in the Miami airport. And I'm just thinking, like, Miami's not even close, right?
Yeah, I love how we were turning this into a world travel podcast. That was actually one of the first things that caught me off guard about Rio is it literally until the day I left, I didn't realize quite how far south it was. I kind of thought it was on the northern tip of Brazil, but it's way down there from the equator, and it's winter down here, so it's like 6 o'clock at night and it's already dark. But yeah, it's an 11-hour flight from Miami, so it was
Oh my
quite a
God.
ways.
So,
Yeah, but
is what they say about the toilets true? That's the question people really want to know.
wait, what do they say about the toilets?
It goes backwards. It goes the other way, counterclockwise or clockwise. Whichever way it goes in the northern hemisphere, it goes the other way in the southern hemisphere.
Is that like a dig you can dig to China type myth? Is this
No.
like an urban myth?
Well, that's why we sent you. Like, we know who's going to win the gold medal. We have more important questions to answer.
I don't know, man. I have not studied the rotation of the toilets. I can tell you that there are several toilets in the media center that are not working
Oh,
properly, put it
no.
that way.
Here we go.
So we're a day in, and there are already an uncomfortable amount of toilets that are not working. But you know, it's all in the game. Here we go, Rio 2016. What are your general takes on the Olympics, and then we'll move on to basketball. Like, do you have any passionate opinions about where they should be? Do you care about this stuff?
I'm into the Olympics. You know, I've always been a big curling fan. And so anything that kind of promotes curling on the global stage to me, it's a thumbs up. No, I mean, I think
Nice.
I'm capable of being caught up in the nationalistic patriotism that goes with it, just like anybody else. So I get excited for them. I don't care too much about the Winter Olympics. The Summer Olympics are a bigger deal. Obviously, track and field, kind of growing up watching that for sure. Basketball has been great ever since. You know, the United States kind of got its act together under Coach K. So, you know, I'm going to be tuning in. I'm not someone who's going to watch the entire opening ceremony start to finish and list off each country alphabetically or anything like that. But no, I generally enjoy them. I'm excited to see what happens with this USA basketball team. It's an interesting field. After watching a couple of the pre-Olympics exhibition games in LA and Oakland, not so sure they're going to get pushed very hard, and I'm a little concerned that it's not going to be as entertaining maybe as we would hope, just because, you know, one-sided games at some point get kind of boring. But I'm in.
Hey man,
I'm ready to
listen,
go.
that's my life you're talking about. My life for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, I wish I was down there riding shotgun with you, although I probably would have studied a little Portuguese before I went, at least enough not to get myself kidnapped. By the way, should we have a safe word for you? Like, just maybe not for this specific podcast, but in general, like if you text me something, I can be your lifeline here.
Yeah, my safe word is boogie. All right. So if you get a text message from me that just says boogie, then panic. That means I've been kidnapped,
Right.
and you need to alert the authorities. Alert my fiance, who sent me down here with really the o my only instruction was to not get kidnapped and to make it to our wedding in a month. So that's the goal. I think it's fairly reasonable, and you know, I would echo all of your sentiments on the Olympics. I think it's a great diversion, particularly the summer. It's like, there's nothing, nobody wants to watch baseball. This is going to be fun. I will say that I never cared about where they're hosted until getting here. And after about an hour, I was convinced that we should only, there should be one city, probably, they should probably do it in Athens, and competing countries around the world should contribute to building out that city as like a permanent host of the Summer Olympics. And we should do it that way.
Well, so what about this idea that LA might get the Olympics? I mean, you lived here, I'm here now. I'm kind of excited. Like, it would be great if the Olympics just came to me. Are you cool with that or no?
I'm totally cool. Like, LA is another city that, like, there are only a handful around the world that have the infrastructure that can definitely handle it. And maybe that makes more sense than building out infrastructure in Greece. But like, I think if you wanted to do like a rotating committee of four or five, I mean, that's how I think we should handle the NBA All-Star game. But just like cities that make sense, we need to stop. We need to like cut out the sort of bribery. Like, I don't even know what goes into the process with site selections for these, but just like a handful of cities that make sense is the smart way to do it.
Well, I just love the idea that Putin's like putting up billions of dollars in graft, and like the USA, we're probably going to have to send like Steph Curry and Klay Thompson to make our recruiting pitch because they got KD. So, I mean, maybe it will work out. We can just get the Olympics in 4 years.
Yeah, that's one thing that I heard everywhere you go in Rio and talk to other journalists and whatnot. Like, they all say that this is kind of crazy and a little bit dysfunctional, but it's nothing compared to how bleak Sochi was in 2014. So we're beating Putin. That's the main thing. But let's talk hoops, man. So I guess what's the biggest story right now? Are we still on Draymond's Snapchat?
I don't know if we're still on it, but since we haven't talked about it, I really do feel like we should address it, don't you?
Where do you stand on Draymond's Snapchat?
Well, I don't know. I mean, part of me just wants to flip out over it. Part of me thinks it's not a huge deal. But I'm a little bit flustered, I guess, by it, just because we had this other situation with the arrest where USA Basketball kind of basically just blew it off, right? Like, Coach K says no punishment. Right. He's making jokes. Colangelo said, oh, yeah, you know, Draymond apologized for it. And they wanted to move on. And Draymond, of course, you know, he tries to, you know, apologize and says, you know, it's not going to happen. He's not going to be a distraction. And then the very next thing, like not even a week or two later, he's a gigantic distraction again. And just like, when does it end? And in this situation, it's just kind of weird. Like, these guys are ambassadors for the country, right? And here he goes exposing his private parts, his shorts, to the entire global audience. I mean, is that the best look? I don't know if it's really the best look. And the guy just keeps apologizing. It's like Bieber, Beyonce, Draymond, just like, sorry, 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 like nonstop this year.
How long were you sitting on the Bieber line? Like, were you frustrated waiting 15 or 16 minutes for that?
No, I've been sitting on it since the last time he apologized, because it's a nonstop apology tour. This guy's always doing something that he seemingly regrets, and I don't know really what to chalk that up to. And I think part of the reason why I'm so frustrated is because everybody knows. I mean, I love his game. I think, you know, he's a modern center, one of the best all-around players in the NBA. Although, by the way, during the pre-Olympics tour, he was not playing very well. I mean, he was probably the worst guy on the roster, including Harrison Barnes, which is saying something. But that's part of where the frustration comes, is he should be better than this stuff. And I would hope that most athletes at this point with social media are better than accidentally Snapchatting their junk to everyone, like right before the Olympics, right before you're getting on the team plane to fly to the Olympics. But
I like how you said he sent a picture of himself to a global audience.
Well, he did, right?
I guess, yeah. Did you see the picture?
Oh, we're going to have to go here. Yes, I saw the picture.
I don't look. I mean, we don't have to.
No, I saw the picture. I'm not going to make any further comment on the picture. I've seen the picture.
Okay. I did not see the picture.
Oh, well, that's why you don't have a strong take about this.
Well, maybe. I don't know. It like I was pretty amazed by how little controversy there was. I mean, it hit in like during like a slow time in sports, and still everybody kind of just shrugged it off, like, yeah, people do that. And so I think there are two potential explanations for that. Like, number one, we might just be sick of Draymond and sick of talking about him. Yeah. And sick of arguing about him.
Yeah.
And like, maybe that is fair, because like, I'm certainly like, I don't know man, I've had enough. Like, I like Draymond the basketball player, but Draymond the personality and like the shtick that he's tried to cultivate, like, I'm all set. Like, just play basketball. But the other thing is, like, we might just be living in the age of dick pic enlightenment, where people sort of just don't care about that stuff anymore. Like, can you imagine if this were 2008, that would have been such a big deal.
No, I hear you. I also do think there's a timing aspect to it. I mean, imagine if he drops that during like game six of the finals, right? Like halftime, he's in the locker room and like everybody's expecting like, oh, can the Warriors come back? And like, boom, Draymond just like hits the world with a below the belt shot.
And a dick pic.
That's what I'm saying. Exactly. Like, I feel like that could have been you know,
that's the only way he could have handled the tail end of the finals worse.
Exactly right. So I think it's some of it is the timing aspect. And I think also it could just be not only Draymond fatigue, but it could just be like this guy has done so much recently that expectations for his behavior has just plunged that far, which is sad because this is a guy who has donated billions of dollars to Michigan State University. He has done a lot of things in the community. He seems like a generally a good guy. If we're at the point now where he's like, you know, being, you know, alongside other sort of like infamous athletes where anything goes because he's just so crazy, he'll do anything. I mean, that's not great for him. But I guess it does add a level of intrigue to these Warriors because everybody else, I mean, Clay, Steph, and Kevin Durant, I mean, they're not really going to be making negative headlines next year.
Yeah. No, I think he has definitely embraced the idea that he's sort of the lightning rod on the Warriors. And I don't know. It feels a little bit too forced for me. Like I would love it to have another Dennis Rodman, but I don't necessarily like Draymond, like pretending to be Dennis Rodman. Like he's just like, I like him more as sort of the underdog who just happens to have grown into one of the best players in the league. Like, The whole like renegade side of things is pretty annoying. Not to say that like a dick pic here or there really it like puts him over the top one way or the other, because like I felt all this 3 weeks ago. But I think more than anything, this just reminded me that like I'm kind of sick of talking about Draymond's screw ups, and it'll be more fun to watch the Warriors than like listen to the conversation around him.
Can I go way too deep with a take on this for a second?
Absolutely.
Okay, so you saw the previous Snapchat one, the G-rated one, right, where all the guys are singing on the plane, and then it pans to Mello, and he just looks like he's totally over it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of like the enduring image.
I love that one.
Yeah, it was great. And, you know, everybody's kind of like laughing, oh, Mello's the old guy, it's so funny, like all these guys are just kind of goofy, and Mello's kind of been there, done that before. You know, I do kind of wonder, like, if you're Mello, and I mean, he's just off the ESPYs where he, LeBron, Chris Paul, Dwayne Wade go and make this really powerful statement, you know, and really calling on other athletes like, hey, we're going to be role models. We're going to, you know, embrace this issue, you know, police brutality and so forth. And they're trying to make a huge statement about responsibility and leadership and all of that. I do wonder if you're Mello and you're also looking at the Olympics like, hey, this is this grand stage. You know, I saw a story go up, I think, on The Undefeated where there's some question, is Mello going to, you know, raise a fist during the, you know, during the gold medal national anthem or something like that. I wonder if you're Carmelo Anthony and now all of a sudden Draymond Green is getting all these headlines for this ridiculous behavior where, you know, he's not leading in any way. He's constantly apologizing for screwing up. He's really kind of bringing, you know, a cloud, so to speak, or distraction over the entire team and, you know, the country, I guess, if you want to look at them as ambassadors. I kind of wonder what he would think about that if you really got, you know, you gave him truth serum. And it's like, are you really just rolling your eyes because they're singing songs, or is there something else going on here?
Oh, come on. Like, hold on. I don't think we can justify or juxtapose Mello with Draymond's misfired DM, number one.
Well, but what about the general idea of how these guys are carrying themselves, right? Like, I think Mello has clearly evolved. Like, he's not the stop snitching guy he was earlier in his career. I mean, he's really made a commitment to his local community in Baltimore and even Syracuse University as well. I mean, this is a guy who's kind of, I think, you know,
oh yeah,
he's past 30. He's sort of like taking on a different dimension. And this is like his fourth time with Team USA too, right? So I think there's a certain level of pride there as well. I mean, they're very clearly trying to take a very serious stance on what is arguably one of the biggest issues in this presidential election too, right? And I think, you know, there's a cry for sort of credibility there. And then on the flip side, the guy right next to him on the team plane is kind of getting into these just ridiculous, petty situations. I don't know. It's just it's hard not to juxtapose those two things for me.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, it's been the Mello video with the I would walk 1,000 miles, the Vanessa Carlton song. Like, I loved that. I loved his role in it just because he is so perfect as the lovable, grumpy veteran with this squad. And it just, it adds to his legacy as like just the most enjoyable Olympian ever. Like, off season Mello is just a joy, man. Like, and I think this year he's added this like social awareness aspect to it, where like it's really impressive what he's doing and what some of the things that he's said, and it's not just the typical athlete sort of paying lip service to it, which is still important. Like, it's very cool that LeBron and Chris Paul and those guys speak out, but like there's an added layer of depth to it, and it feels more personal with Melo. And so I think that's really cool. I don't think you can sort of read too much into the Snapchats.
I'm more just saying, like, there's a clear contrast here. There are two different things that are going on. And I think that maybe Draymond doesn't understand quite the depth of how he reflects on these other guys who seemingly have really important things they want to say. And they want to use this stage not only to sell Nikes and everything else, but, you know, potentially to change some hearts and minds.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, how do you feel about Melo's career and like where we've been and where things could go from here?
You know, I've always been a little bit disappointed that he just seemed like he was so eager to plateau with what he was good at, and I kind of wish he would have pushed himself harder. I know that's a pretty common knock on him. And it's unfortunate because he's always going to get the Bron comparisons, and Bron was just able to take his game to so many ridiculous levels and so many twists based on whether he was in Miami and Cleveland the first time, now back to Cleveland, where it just there feels like there's been more of a stagnancy with Carmelo Anthony. I mean, to be honest, right now I'm in countdown mode because he really only has 2 years left on his contract. He's got an early termination option in 2018, and to me he's like that number one candidate where I want him to say, you know what, the money is already in the bank. Like, in 2018, you should sign up to play, you know, ride shotgun with LeBron, you know, assuming the Cavaliers are still the best team in the East, you know, take that smaller role, be that supersized, like, Joe Johnson type player, you know, like, rich man millionaires Joe Johnson, right, where he doesn't have to be the alpha or even the secondary guy, but he can just, you know, find a role where he's very lethal on a good team, because he's endured so many playoff struggles when he's even made it to the playoffs. You know, there's been a bunch of lottery years as well. It just kind of seems like he's one of the most irrelevant superstars on the court in the NBA right now. And I realize he's going to want to cash these checks for these next couple of years, but at some point I would like him to get a real title shot. And I think the only way he can do that is by significantly sacrificing financially to kind of team up in a couple of years.
Yeah, definitely. That's basically, we need to free him from the Knicks.
Yeah, bingo.
Long story short, step one is get Melo out of New York. And I totally agree. And that's one of the reasons he's been so much fun on the Olympics, on the Olympic teams these past few years, is because this is like our opportunity to see him in a situation that actually makes sense. We had maybe 6 months with the Knicks like a few years ago where he was getting to play a little bit of four, and it sort of started to click. Raymond Felton was in shape, but for the most part, he's been in a tough situation. And it is, you're right, it's crazy to think about, like, 6 or 7 years ago, maybe even longer, that there was like a legitimate rivalry with LeBron and Carmelo, and then like LeBron has been in a different stratosphere for the past like 7 years.
Yeah, and I mean, I think part of it too, you know, he made his choice and he clearly had his priority of getting to the big market, and it worked out well enough. I mean, he got the max contract. Yeah. You know,
that's the one that's going to be tough for him to live down, is pushing for that trade
Exactly. Instead
of just signing. I guess it would have been, there was a lockout, so he would have had to sign the next winter. But like, the Knicks would have been in so much better shape had they just held out. And it's like, it's such a sore point for Knicks fans in general, because like I'm sure they've been talking about this for like 6 years, but it's just painful to look back and think about how much better things could have been had they kept Gallinari.
Oh, absolutely. And that's going to be the defining moment of his career, right? It's not going to be anything that really happened on the court. It's that decision to, you know, basically leverage his way to the biggest city and to the max contract that was waiting for him eventually is going to be what defines him. And people are going to always contrast that with guys who have won, unless he can write a different ending. And that's what I think he should try to do.
Yeah. I sort of feels like we're seeing him attempt to write a different ending now. I think it, like, speaking out is a big deal and super impressive. And I think we might be, the Olympics might help shift perceptions a little bit, where like, I think Carmelo's legacy is actually going to age really well, and people are going to look back and say, like, we never appreciated him as much as we should have. He took a lot of shit that he didn't deserve, and he was one of the more enjoyable scorers of the last 25 years. And so basically, like, we just need to get him to a situation where people can realize that. Like, get him out of New York, because anytime he's on the Knicks, like, people are going to be disappointed because he's not LeBron. He can't carry a team by himself, but in the right situation, he could be awesome.
Yeah, I actually worry that if he doesn't have his last chapter, what you're describing in terms of the guy who's underappreciated, incredibly talented, will actually get lost. And it's going to be more of, you know, one trick pony, wasn't good enough to do it. You know, didn't care enough about the team to, you know, lead a championship, you know, whatever it might be. Like, and I think that those knocks could stick more than sort of the more optimistic way of looking at it, which is what you described. So it's sort of like he has to have, you know, a last hurrah. And I just don't see it happening in New York these next couple of seasons. I definitely don't see it happening with guys like Derrick Rose and this band of misfits that Phil Jackson's put together. But I could see, like, a situation where, you know, he'll only be, what, 33, 34 in a couple of years once he can, you know, opt out. I mean, that could be, you know, a run where he gets to two or three finals with LeBron. You know, that could completely change how we look at him.
Well, that one of my questions, like, along those lines, is like, how good do you think the Warriors are going to be?
Well, I was reading this excellent story by Lee Jenkins in Sports Illustrated, this incredible magazine people should definitely subscribe to. And it said there was a computer model that believes the Warriors are going to win 83 games out of 82, according to one rival executive, which that doesn't sound like the greatest model of all time. But I think that, you know, on paper, they should be better than last year. I don't know if that means they're going to win more games than they did last season. I mean, Steph was in such a zone before the injuries. It's hard to see him being able to duplicate that again. At the same time, he won't have to, because they've got the second and third best players in the NBA. They've got, you know, Klay Thompson, who's, you know, as hungry and motivated as ever. I mean, that guy's just not a distraction type of guy. He's all about basketball. And then they've got Draymond Green and, you know, a solid center in Zaza Pachulia. I mean, they basically have every hole filled. They did a really nice job, you know, building out the second unit, getting guys like David West. I mean, the JaVale McGee training camp could probably be its own television show. I mean, they got a lot going on there positively. So if you're just saying, like, if you ran, you know, a 2K season with those guys, they should win 75 games.
Well, and to bring it back to Melo, I'm curious because, like, if anything, I really do think we might be underselling how dominant this Warriors team is going to be. I mean, they're basically going to be able to play in shifts with different sets of superstars. And just stagger the minutes of KD and Steph, and have Klay dominating, and Draymond doing his thing. It doesn't necessarily need to score to be effective. I mean, there's, like, the pieces fit really, really nicely, and there's a decent chance that they're just going to come through and wreck the league for the next 2 years. And in that case, like, my dream is for basically LeBron to, like, call up Carmelo, call up Chris Paul, and it'll be like that movie, The Expendables. It'll be like The Expendables, where, like, you bring in everybody and they all just try to take down the Warriors. I mean, and I don't necessarily know if they would succeed at that point in everybody's career, but, like, it would be a lot of fun to see that team just go for it 1 year.
Well, I love it. I do think that the better the Warriors are, the more pressure there is on a guy like Carmelo in a couple of years to just say, do you really want to go and play for a 5, 6, 7, 8 seed team that's going nowhere, or do you want to matter? And I think, you know, right now he's, like, one of the most irrelevant superstars. That's going to continue as his, you know, as his decline increases. And, you know, if a guy like Dwayne Wade is willing to go from Miami to Chicago over some pettiness, you know, with the front office negotiations, then I think everyone should be willing to kind of keep an open mind when it comes to, you know, their late career moves. And yeah, it could take a second super team to handle the Warriors, depending on how this thing goes, because all those guys are in, you know, a potential spot where they're going to be in their primes the next 3-4 seasons, maybe longer, when you look at their core guys. I mean, the one aspect that we don't know is where the salary cap goes. I think there's going to, you know, the hints from Adam Silver were that they're going to try to break this thing up and make it difficult for the Warriors to kind of keep their guys together. So that could kind of throw a wrench into all of this, but for sure I'd love to see Melo do something else, because it's cool that he can shoot the international three-pointers. You know, it's cool that he puts up these gigantic numbers against the Chinas and the Nigerias of the world. And that's fine, but to me that's not really a legacy. You know, that's like a footnote or like a, you know, a third or fourth paragraph in your basketball biography. And right now he's just missing the meat of his story.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I've been Team Melo for 10 or 15 years now, dating back to his first year at Syracuse, and it bums me out when people hate on his legacy. So I hope he does get sort of a happy ending, maybe with the NBA Expendables. I don't know if I want to include D. Wade into that mix, though. He would be the most washed up. He'd be like the Sly Stallone of the group, and I don't know. After 2 years in Chicago, if we're still gonna be. We're still going to need more D Wade in our lives, but yeah, hopefully things start to break a little bit better for Melo over the next few years, because he truly is enjoyable. And you know, I just like, one of the best parts about being an NBA fan is like, eventually, like, all these guys become like such mainstays that you root for them to succeed. And Melo kind of reminds me of Dirk, where like, if you put the right pieces around him, like, he could be very, very good. And in the wrong situation where he has to carry everybody, like, it gets a little dicey.
Well, great news. Phil Jackson has found a 14-year-old Latvian prodigy and a 7 years past his prime Derrick Rose to carry Melo to a title. Hey,
all right.
I got a question for you, actually. So did you see, you know, you saw Lee's piece on LeBron and everything. What did you make of the biggest takeaway, which is this idea he's chasing Michael Jordan's ghost? I mean, are you pro ghost chasing or anti ghost chasing?
For real, that actually kind of bummed me out, because like, the coolest part about LeBron winning the title was basically like ending this like 6 or 7 year run of sort of talk radio bullshit that has followed him everywhere. And like, he delivered on every last bit of the promises that he's made or whatever, you know, promise kept.
Like,
he has nothing left to prove after those finals, and it kind of freaks me out that he then came out and started talking about Jordan like that. Like, LeBron, sometimes he just says stuff to say stuff, so I don't necessarily know like how passionate he is about the Jordan stuff, but like, Jordan's legacy happened so perfect, like his career happened so perfectly, that it's hard for anyone to ever match that, like, narrative wise and I just would rather he, like, I wanted this year to be a sort of a victory lap for the Cavs. And I don't want to get into a situation where we're comparing every step of his to Jordan, because in that scenario, like, he can't live up to it. And there's really no world where LeBron's career should be considered a disappointment. And I think the only way that you could do that is if you're comparing him to Michael Jordan going forward.
Well, so I think that, number one, I think he is pretty serious about chasing Jordan. And the reason why I say that is, there was an All-Star game whenever Jordan turned 50. So this is probably like 3-4 years ago, whatever it was, where LeBron was just getting barraged by Jordan questions, Jordan comparison questions.
Oh, yeah.
And he happily answered them for like 20 to 25 minutes with lots of nuance and different angles, and not necessarily just the most pat responses that you would expect. This was right around the time when everybody was debating Mount Rushmore. Remember that? Those were great times. So I think that it does matter to him. And I actually think there's a little calculation to this too, right? Because the way his numbers line up and the accumulation factor, because he came into the NBA so early, because he's enjoyed such incredible health, because he's got the three titles right now, and also the third one was just so spectacular in terms of taking down a 73-win team, digging out of the 3-1 hole. I mean,
it was incredible.
Yeah, clearly better than any of Jordan's individual titles, right?
Yeah, like, it's the sort of thing that we haven't totally processed just how awesome that series was. And I think it's going to take us another year. Like, before next year's finals, we should take a few days to just go back and watch how ridiculous those games were.
Exactly. So I think what he's really feeling right now is a sense that, like, hey, it's possible again. You know, if he retires with two titles and a string of finals losses, I think probably even his own mind, but in the minds of the consensus NBA fan, he's not going to match 6-0, right? But if he's able, now that he's got three, if he can get to four, if he can be higher than Jordan on basically every stat because of the accumulation factor, if he has this amazing triumph in delivering the hometown team the title, ending the championship drought, if he winds up, you know, accumulating nearly as many finals MVP awards, if he has, you know, as many MVPs, it could get to a situation where that's a really legitimate conversation. And I think he wants to kind of further that. He wants to be in that talk because he probably feels he deserves to. So from that standpoint, I almost feel like he's posturing or positioning for the future just to let people know, like, hey, just
laying the foundation.
Exactly right. Yeah. Get himself in that conversation and bring it back to Mike versus LeBron, because I think most people would agree if LeBron puts in another 5 years, even just like a standard 5 years, you know, with a little bit of decline there as he goes through his 30s, he's going to be top two all time, right?
We'll see. I'm not sure. I don't care as much about the final rankings, but he's definitely in the top five mix after what happened this year, which is where he belongs. And, you know, we'll see how it shakes out. My thing, and, you know, if he goes out and beats these Warriors and goes and has another series where he leads everyone in points, rebounds, assists, blocks, steals, like, I will be on street corners saying that he's better than Michael Jordan. Like, I will be a crazy person. But right now, it's just like, I don't necessarily want him taking on that cause, you know? Like, just be you. Like, I think LeBron, one of the most enjoyable aspects of his career has been watching him sort of turn into somebody that we can appreciate for who he is, not who he's supposed to be or who we want him to be. And so, like, the ghost thing, I don't give a shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he does beat these Warriors with Steph, KD, I mean, that would be unbelievable. And I think you'd be down, you know, in a certain degree, you'd be down to just the Jordan lifers who are always going to say Jordan no matter what, if he did that, because...
Well, you're a Jordan lifer. Where would you put him?
I mean,
if
he's able to take out both KD and Steph, they're fully healthy, that they run off a 70-win season, and he still beats them in the finals, and he's still the best guy in every aspect. I mean, that is, no offense, that's better than flu game. You know, that's better. That's better than some of his other great moments. The shrug.
It's wild. Well, and you look back at some of the teams that Jordan played. Like, we don't need to go too far down this road, but like, I mean, the Jazz of those years were kind of like the Clippers now. I mean, there were no teams playing Jordan that were on par with the Spurs, the Warriors, even the Thunder a few years ago. Like, LeBron's gone through some, like, really good squads.
Yeah, and I think that some of this Jordan talk from LeBron, too, is finally just, you know, he had a year where he was feeling overlooked and underappreciated, right? So now, yeah. I mean, this is kind of the victory lap, too. It's
puffing
like,
his chest
yeah,
out.
It's like,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm chasing that ghost, you know? It's like, now you guys remember me, you know? You forgot about me last season.
I'm excited for next year's Cavs, because there's going to be so much less drama and more just like everybody chilling for 6 months and us getting to just enjoy them in the same way that like it, we get to enjoy Melo in the Olympics. Like there's just like, you're not going to be able to write the story. Like what's wrong with the Cavs in February of next year? Because everybody like LeBron kind of ended all that and all that sort of melted away with that title.
For sure. Like don't even try to do the can Kyrie Irving be a point guard or
yeah, man. We watched the finals.
It's like, is Kevin Love going to disappear? It's like, guess what? Like a lot of these things don't really matter. at least not until, you know, Eastern Conference finals and finals time. Yeah, for sure.
We should talk about, KD at Oracle. You were there. Give me a quick synopsis of the night.
Oh yeah, that was fun. I mean, so I saw their two games. They went back to back against China and LA and in Oakland. And first of all, like from the China standpoint, I know that's not what you asked about, but I thought it was kind of funny. So they basically lose by 50 in LA, right? And for whatever reason, the traveling Chinese media is just question after question peppering the coach and the player on the podium after like a 50-point loss with really serious minded questions, as if like somehow they were going to turn it around within 48 hours and like launch this comeback against the against Team USA. And I started to feel bad for them because they're just getting hammered with these questions. And then when the press conference is over, the Chinese media just starts giving an ovation to the player and the coach after a 50-point loss. So international basketball is like a little bit different than
state-sponsored media. I love it.
A little bit different than the NBA. And then two nights later, these guys come out and they go through like an hour-long warm-up. They're on the court for like 45 minutes and Team USA isn't even out there. They're just going through layup lines, endless layup lines by themselves.
Is that just for KD, like welcoming the fans or the fans welcoming him?
No, this was China was doing this. Like, I don't, like they really thought, I guess they were just locked in. Like, hey, we're a young team. We're going to be disciplined. Like, we're going to just go out there and like get
shock the world.
We're going to get so ready for this game. And, you know, KD scores 5 points in the first 29 seconds and all that preparation didn't really work. But, anyway, so back to, the China aspect of it was a little bit distracting. I'm not going to lie.
I'm watching China. That they're the first game of the Olympics for Team USA. So I'm going on Saturday. Can't wait. I'm going to, I guess the only player on China that I know is Zhao Qi, who is the 7'3 kid who was apparently 18. And then close to the draft, everyone was like, this guy is 24. And I forget where he was drafted, but hey, Saturday is his Olympic debut, and I'm all in.
What's great is when the Chinese reporters would ask guys like DeAndre Jordan for the full breakdown on a guy, you know, like you're mentioning, and they're just, you know, looking back like, oh yeah, like super promising, real hard worker, great talent, like going to be unbelievable. Like, you know, these guys are like, who?
Just no idea who we're talking about.
Exactly. So anyway, back to the whole KD thing though. So I was anticipating the Warriors crowd to really embrace him for sure. Like that was just kind of a no-brainer. And as soon as I got there, I mean, there's dozens of fans already in t-shirts and jerseys with both his USA number and his Warriors t-shirts and jerseys lined up, taking pictures outside the billboard of the arena. I mean, they were all in, but it wasn't really just about the fans. And it was sold out too, which was good to see. And KD obviously, you know, came out gunning, just kind of like, you know, give some love back to the crowd. But it was really also about the Warriors too. You know, guys like, you know, GM Bob Myers is sitting courtside. Steph shows up at the game with his wife. I mean, I'm sure he had better things to do, you know, filming olive oil commercials or whatever else they do on their in their off time. But it really seemed like it was this welcoming environment from the Warriors organization itself. You know, Draymond takes the mic and welcomes KD to the Bay Area. You know, Klay Thompson comes out with his comments about how there's not really going to be tons of sacrifice because they're all focused on the same thing. So they're not really worried about shots and so forth. I mean, they really went above and beyond to kind of make him feel at home. And you never know with a decision that big, like, does KD have any regrets about it, second thoughts? I mean, we can assume that he doesn't. But I thought that from that night, it was sort of sealed that up. It was like, okay, this recruitment that had gone on for months kind of led to this moment, and now he's really been embraced by the entire organization. They did a nice job with it.
Yeah, I like hearing you describe them and the group basically. Like, I feel like the Warriors are sort of a clique that outsiders can point at and be like, Steph's lame, like. These guys are obnoxious. They're overrated. This like tech babble bullshit from Silicon Valley is super obnoxious. But I really think that like if you're in the middle of that circle, all those guys are pretty awesome. I mean, like Steph is like a legitimately cool human, and Steve Kerr is great. Bob Myers has seemed great. It's for the past 2 years. I mean, like I think hanging out with those guys, like Draymond would be a lot of fun to hang out with. Klay is low-key probably the coolest one of any of them. And like in that circle, I can't imagine any scenario where KD is like, man, I wish I was still in Oklahoma City with Nick Collison. Like, it just is tough. Like the Warriors, like I get anyone who doesn't like them and is rooting against them this year. But like if you're in that circle, like it's a cool group.
You saw that Klay yawning interview, right?
I love that. That was so far, that's my favorite clip of the Olympics. Like, all due respect to the 1,000 miles sing along. Klay, they asked him, for anyone who didn't see it, they asked him about what was it? Was it like,
what does it mean to be an Olympian?
Yeah, and then Klay yawns for like a solid 10 seconds, like, and then he says, "Wait, what was the question?" It was amazing.
He like shakes himself awake, knocks the reporter's recorder out of his hands. I mean, it's just a train wreck. But it just shows that he doesn't really care. I mean, he really cares about basketball. That's what he's there to do.
Clay's my guy. He really, like, my old coworker Juliet Lipman is the pioneer of the Claytheism movement, and I never really saw it until the past year when there was like this crazy conversation surrounding the Warriors, and Clay was just like not really engaged. He's kind of like a lovable pothead who's also brilliant, and he just sort of just is kind of going with the flow and like doing his own thing. And I think next to the Warriors last year and next to the Warriors, especially this year, like he's a pretty awesome counterpoint to the hype. Like he just shows up and does him.
For sure. And I think the best part is that underneath all of that is this crazy competitor who can go out and put 37 points up in a quarter, right? Like,
oh yeah.
And I mean, he's one of many Warriors who faltered at the end of the finals, right? So if we're looking to like set the table for next year's storylines, I mean, here's another guy who's going to be on a little bit of a redemption quest.
Well, by the same token though, if he doesn't lose his mind in game 6 in Oklahoma, then the Thunder win, KD stays, and then the Warriors are coming back counting on Harrison Barnes for $100 million. So, like, Clay is kind of the cornerstone to this whole thing.
For sure. Yeah, maybe he was just playing the long game, right?
Yeah, maybe. Clay's operating on a different frequency from anyone else. That much is certain.
Oh, there was another thing with the KD game in Oakland, because it was also Harrison Barnes' return. Some people didn't quite put that on the same level as the KD arrival, but he missed a couple jumpers and there were some grumbles, but by the end of the night, there was some respectful applause for him.
I feel bad for Barnes, but I'm, you know, at the same time, Harrison Barnes is making $95 million.
Yeah, I don't feel too bad for him.
This is like the best case scenario for his career.
And he's getting a gold medal out of it. I mean, he's late.
That's right.
He's latering this thing completely.
Speaking of Barnes, we should wrap up. Who are you most excited to watch over the next 2 weeks?
You know, I've got two guys I'm looking at. I'm a little worried they might be the same as your two. We have not consulted on this. my first one would be Kyrie Irving, and my second one's DeMarcus Cousins.
Why Kyrie?
So the thing with Kyrie is, I mean, number one, the Olympics are going to be basically an extended Diet Pepsi commercial, right? Like the one-on-one stuff that he does off the dribble. If you're not an NBA level defender and you're trying to guard him on the ball, good luck. You know, there could be bodies flying left, right. I mean, it could be like a wind machine basically with him knocking guys over with his dribbles. So from a highlight standpoint, I think he has a lot of potential there. But I think also, you know, if the USA ever does get challenged here, and I don't know if it's going to be France, Spain, Lithuania, maybe they just have an off night, whatever. I mean, the big weakness on this USA squad is its lack of the A-list point guards, right? I mean, basically everybody stayed home. Westbrook, you know, Curry, Chris Paul, Damian Lillard, you know, right down the list of all these guys who aren't there. So it's basically going to be on Kyrie to kind of run the offense and get them out of it. And I know Coach K has tried to go to some no point guard looks, you know, Jimmy Butler guarding point guards, Paul George guarding point guards. I think it looks great and it really works well defensively, but there could be a time at some point during this tournament where they need a real point guard to run the offense, and that's going to kind of be Kyrie's job. So, you know, from that standpoint, both X's and O's and highlights, I just think he's one of the more interesting guys on this roster because he's going to, you know, figure prominently in both.
Yeah, no, there's definitely point guard is like the only real question mark for them. It really bums me out that Dame Lillard isn't here. I think he would have been so fun as an Olympian. And also is the type of dude who has like he has a little bit of an attitude, and I like when those guys are representing our country. Although we have Boogie and Draymond for that element as well to potentially start international incidents over the next 2 weeks. But Dame would have been awesome. Kyrie, it will be interesting to see him sort of build on his finals a little bit. You mentioned the Diet Pepsi thing. One of the things you find out very quickly at the Olympics is that the Olympics are very protective of their sponsors. So, like, I don't think you would see a Diet Pepsi within 10 miles of an Olympics venue. However, it would be so much fun to see Kyrie come out for one of these games in an Uncle Drew getup. because, like, you can't convince me that he couldn't play some of these preliminary rounds in a fat suit.
You could put him in the fat suit. I mean, you could put him in any sort of costume. I mean, it would be, like, against China, I mean, they're probably going to be a 50-point favorite. When you really think about it, this is a 40-minute game. It's not a 48-minute game. So if you're favored by like 48, 50 points,
throw on the fat suit.
Yeah, throw. I mean, there's a huge margin.
Kyrie can drop a double-double like
there's
that.
There's a huge margin for error there. I think you could play 4-on-5 potentially. Actually, if I were you, I might get sneakers. Just have them ready with you. They might just do a thing where they pick somebody out of the crowd, and it's like, okay, you get to go against China now. You made the trip all the way here. Go for it.
I'm ready, man. I can hit an open jump shot. I can't really do much else. I think I'd be a defensive liability even against the Chinese or the Nigerians. But I can hang, and you know, my guy Harrison Barnes could do the rest.
Hey, so the other guy I want to see though is Cousins. And you were talking the international incident potential there. I mean, he did have a hard foul against China, which I was worried he was going to get ejected from one of the exhibition games. It was so hard. I don't think he actually meant it. I think it was just purely accidental. He couldn't control himself. And when you're playing against guys who are not even close to NBA caliber, you could tell the NBA guys are like thrown off and like really like not sure what to make of these guys' moves and stuff. So sometimes that ends with, you know, DeAndre just like punching one of their shots into like the 30th row with a block shot. And sometimes it ends with like DeMarcus just elbowing someone's head off because they just aren't expecting the kinds of movements that they're facing. But I think not only from the, you know, humor side with Cousins, I also just think from the basketball side, like this guy is really talented, really big, and he doesn't get to play with good players very often or in an organized environment very often. So if you throw him out there and now he's going maybe one-on-one against a guy like Powell, or one-on-one against a Rudy Gobert, let's say that's the gold medal matchup, that's going to be awesome. Like, that could be really, really great, right?
Yeah, I love the Olympics for exactly that reason, whether it's watching Melo or watching a guy like Jimmy Butler or Paul George. Like, you get to see them surrounded with the right pieces, and you see how much better some of them could be. Even watching, like, Iverson, like, 10 or 15 years ago, I guess it was 2004, that Olympics did not end well, but it was fun to watch him surrounded by guys that actually belonged on the court with him. And Boogie, it'll be sort of the same dynamic where, like, instead of having the weight of 10 different types of Sacramento dysfunction weighing him down, like, he gets to just go out and be awesome. And more than anything else, I think it's going to be a reminder to the rest of the NBA, like, yo, this is the most talented guy available who, like, that is actually like a semi-realistic option or trade target for teams, because I think that gets lost in Sacramento, and he's not quite good enough or sane enough to sort of fix it by himself. But like, talent alone, it's fun to watch him just sort of do his thing and be in a good situation for once.
For sure. And it's an opportunity for a guy who's been hit with the loser label, right? Because there's going to be a lot of people out there who say, hey, Sacramento's DeMarcus Cousins' fault because he's the best player, right? So here's an opportunity for him to get a nice taste of winning, to show that he can contribute to a winner, you know, to put up big numbers. I mean, he should be getting double-doubles every single game. You know, it's a nice to just kind of remind people, like, hey, you know, I'm not the worst stereotypes that people put out there about me. I'm not that person. I'm, you know, I'm a real effective contributor.
He's kind of that person, but at the same time, he is also, if you put him in a good situation, you can get the best out of him. So it's sort of like he's defined by his surroundings more than some of the other players are.
You would have loved the optimistic thirsting from Warriors fans about how perfect Cousins would fit with the rest of their group. that was a below the radar wrinkle from that game.
I've had enough. I've had enough of Warriors fans, and I feel like we haven't, like, they signing KD has kind of obscured the fact that they pulled off what has to be one of the bigger choke jobs in recent sports history. And there was like maybe 1 or 2 weeks of comeuppance before they turned around and signed KD, and nobody could really make Warriors jokes anymore. But so I feel like we were almost robbed of Warriors Schadenfreude over the summer. It would have been a great 4 months of making fun of them.
Well, they have to win now, right? I mean, that's the whole pressure aspect to it, is like that all that stuff comes back in full force if this whole super team thing doesn't produce a title now. And I think, you know, as fatigued as we are about talking about Warriors from last season and even the season before, mean, that is the whole story of the NBA season, is can these guys with their brilliant offseason architecture, you know, guaranteed to win executive of the year again, you know, Bob Myers, are they going to be able to deliver, or do they wind up being a multi-year disappointment, with which would really kind of defy comparison? I mean, yes, the Heat didn't really win the first year together, but they put it together pretty spectacularly after that. To blow one up 3-1 and then come back and not get it done next season would be crazy.
So I got to go get dinner soon, but
the churros are calling.
I've thought about this, but I think there's a good chance that what you're talking about is right, and that's how it plays out, is that there's like a ton of scrutiny on this team, and it just sort of builds through the months, and even as they play well, people are wondering, well, like, okay, so you guys are good now, but we watched it fall apart last season, so like prove it in the playoffs. But there's also part of me that feels like this is going to go the other direction, and they're going to get, like, Durant will get there in October, and it'll probably even start over the next 2 weeks. And it's going to be so much fun to play basketball, and just like the actual basketball situation is going to be so good that these guys are just going to be having fun, and a lot of the pressure will sort of melt away, at least for the first 6 months. And like the Warriors especially, no matter what, I think priority one for them after last season and like 8 months of comparing them to the greatest teams of all time, like I'm pretty sure that they're going to come into this year and be like, listen, we don't care about any of that. So just like, we're going to work on chemistry. We're going to play and have fun, and we're not trying to win 73 games. Like, I think Kerr will go out of his way to keep them under 73 this year. And like, I think there's a chance that this is going to go smoother than people expect.
Well, I think it's going to go very smooth. So if it goes even smoother than sort of my expectations, I mean, because part of it is, it's not just about how they got better, but it's about how a lot of the rest of the West got worse. You know, I mean, Clippers, Spurs, you know, right down the list of teams that were in that second tier last year are no longer as good as they were. They took significant steps back, or they had big time losses this summer, whereas Golden State kind of patched things together pretty well in their second unit and plugged in Zaza. I mean, to me, you know, they're more dominant relative to the rest of the Western Conference than they were in either of the previous seasons, and more dominant than the Spurs were at any point really late in their run. So I think it should go really smooth. And if it goes even smoother than that, then they may wind up just backing into 70 wins, which is awful to say, but it could happen.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I just, like, there were so many expectations with LeBron and the Heat, and I feel like the media is in a different place now, where it's more about curiosity with the Warriors. And I think the Warriors, not only will there be less like overt scrutiny, like, you guys better win 75 games or else we're all going to be pissed and call you failures and cowards, because that's what some of the Heat conversation felt like a few years ago. But I also feel like it's just going to work, and they're going to have fun, and it'll be kind of freewheeling, like fast paced, and everybody's going to get theirs. And you know, maybe that's naive too, but I don't worry as much about pressure with them.
Yeah, I hear you. I think the one thing on the pressure point, though, is that they have used the D word dynasty, right? I mean, they have talked about themselves potentially as a team, and they didn't quite go to like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, right? Like, they didn't go to that, but they have kind of headed in that direction. And so if they do face significant adversity, if one of the stars goes down injured, if they get down in a playoff series, if they lose 4 games in a row randomly, if Kevin Durant is too passive in trying to find his role early in the season, whatever these things might be, I do think that they're going to hear some of that stuff that you're thinking maybe that they will avoid. I can just kind of foresee that coming, just because of how grandly they've talked about themselves, you know, and also the fact that Lacob's still there, right? I mean, you know, Mr. Lightyears is still looming behind all of this. So I think there's going to be a certain level.
Don't
of,
remind me.
Yeah, I know. There's going to be a certain level of resentment behind what they do. But if things go well, we're talking about one of the greatest bandwagons in the history of the NBA, right? I mean, everyone's going to jump on this one.
Yeah, I think they may be pretty good at tuning all that stuff out. But hey, it all starts this week. I feel like this is going to be a little bit of a bonding experience with KD and Clay and Draymond. So we'll see. Hopefully we can avoid any further Snapchat incidents, misfired DMs. Clay is really the veteran in that scenario. That's Draymond's issue. He's had too much too soon, and maybe that explains it. But yeah, man. So let's talk next week. Are you around?
I'll be around. We should definitely talk. Real quick, let's get predictions. I mean, you think USA is going to win it all, right?
I have no real hot takes about this. I'm excited to check out practice in a few days and then kick off the opening ceremonies. But for right now, I'm off to find an adapter for my room because I can't charge my laptop in the hotel hallway. And then probably more churros.
What a life. You're living large.
Yeah. I'll talk to you soon, man.
All right. Don't forget, check on the toilets.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.